The Napoleonic Era, Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Napoleon's Death Mask. Now, there's a couple of things that I'm going to do here. There is a lot going on. There's dressing, there's arguing over the will, where he's going to be buried, and a whole variety of things. So I'm going to take some of the material out of order so we can just focus on the death masks. So we're going to look at what took place. Now, as far as what I'm going to use as sources for this, although I will give you a longer list at the end, I'm going to use Bertrand's account for part of it, and then I'm going to use the St. Helena story account for a more intimate detail because it has a great section on the business with the death mask. There's actually some artwork involved, not just the death mask. So let's go to Bertrand, his diary, May the 6th. 6 o'clock in the morning, the governor, Sir Hudson Lowe, accompanied by his staff and the island officials, with the French commissioner, entered Napoleon's room. At 8 o'clock in the morning, the plaster cast of the emperor's head was to have been made, but the necessary material was lacking. They didn't have plaster of Paris. So I'll talk about what they did a little bit later. At the moment, the emperor's face made him look younger. He looked 40, but by 4 o'clock, he looked older. At 10 o'clock, Mr. Ibsen and Commander Henriette came to draw the emperor on his deathbed. Mr. Mariette would appear to have made a fairly good likeness of his profile. So there's some artwork involved. And I've seen both of them. They're not very good, okay? But hey, it's not like you're going to sit there for 3 days and get it right. Then we have the post-mortem examination that we've already talked about. And then after that was finished, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Napoleon was dressed in the uniform of the chaussier of the guard with his boots, spurs, orders, medals, decoration, and his hat. The body was laid on the cloak that he had worn at Marengo and which had been spread over the camp bed on which he died. White curtains had been twisted around four pillars in front of the altar. The walls of the room had been draped with black, as well as the floor and the ceiling. The bed was surrounded by candelabra and torches, with a candelabra in the middle. Grand Marshal stood at the head of the bed, General Montholon at the foot, Marchand behind him. Also at the head of the bed were Madame Bertrand and her children, and behind her the priest, Vignali, who knelt before the altar. Now this is in preparation for the visitation by people from the island of St. Helena, dignitaries, etc., and so on. Okay, now let's get to the death masks. There has been conjecture, a lot of discussion, about the two death masks of Napoleon. Now, Antomarchi made the first attempt, but the second mask, which is attributed to him, was in reality largely made by Dr. Burton, but it's still called the Antomarchi death mask, as it's recognized. What happened is on the first occasion, Dr. Burton was not able to procure sufficient plaster of Paris. What he had was pulverized church statues. So they pulverized that material and tried that. Antomarchi could do very little with it. So that's why it doesn't turn out very well. For the second attempt, Dr. Burton obtained gypsum crystals from George Island. Now, George Island is a rock adjacent to St. Helena, and he managed to get there in a longboat, risking his life with some sailors. That probably was the sole substance employed in the second attempt, and it was Dr. Burton who made the successful impression. Now, both of these were seen at Longwood, and there have been copies of them have been made. The second is incomparably better than the first, which somehow, the first one somehow resembled kind of like a carnival mask and was devoid of dignity. Napoleon's features appeared very blunted, and the molding on the sides of the brow was incomplete. It was an unsatisfactory reproduction of a head and countenance that in death were majestic. 40 hours elapsed before the second impression was made. Remember, there's no embalming fluid on the island, so Napoleon is just there in the heat. Well, decomposition was obviously setting in. His facial muscles had sagged, bringing the cheekbones into prominence, which gave him a kind of a tragic aspect. Slightly opened lips showed teeth. Normally, Nowadays, I believe they use super glue to keep the lips sealed. The teeth were referred to by narrators as white, but which the factual part was they were habitually covered in kind of a licorice-like substance. Once more, Novarez had to shave him, for his beard had grown since the last attempt, and the opened collar at his throat, and Burton covered the face with pulverized gypsum that he had personally prepared overnight, and this attempt was successful. Archambault held the head while Burton took an impression of the back and the neck, while Antomarchi assisted. A young lieutenant passing through wrote a letter to his mother in England. Quote, I went once again where they were taking the casts of the head, but the stench was so horrible that I could not remain. Dr. Burton was taking it with the French doctors. End of quote. By the time they were finished, the skin of Napoleon's face was beginning to peel, so nothing further could be done. And in order to protect the body from flies that had gathered in swarms, the body was covered by a mosquito net. Novarez writes that the body had now, was they were preparing to place it in its coffin without further delay, and that it had gone far that afternoon in a state of complete putrefaction. Under the supervision of Rutledge, it was lowered, the body was lowered into the first, he calls it the shell, but it's actually the first coffin. Indeed, Rutledge and Arno, working in relays, had not left the body at any time, Rutledge especially guarding the heart and stomach, which Lowe was always afraid of was going to be carried off. So that's the idea with the two death masks. 40 hours gap between one over the other. And so what we're looking at next is we're going to place Napoleon in the four coffins. Two of them wood, one of them tin, one of them lead. Two of them will be sealed, the lead and the tin ones. And then we'll have the funeral, and then we'll have the procession. But we have some arguing. There's a couple of arguments that are going to take place. The biggest one is over what is supposed to go on Napoleon's gravestone, because the French had it all planned out, that it was supposed to be something really, really, really very specific. Yeah, the French wanted Napoleon, born at Ajuco, 15th of August, 1769, and died St. Helena, 5th of May, 1821. And Lowe wants no part of it. He wanted the name Bonaparte to be on the inscription, not Napoleon. So there will be no inscription on the tomb covering. So that's one of the arguments. And then they argued about the will a little bit, because according to English law, Napoleon's will would not be considered legal because the will had been written in his hand exclusively. There were no witnesses. There was no notary, and in England that was required, a notary of the will and witnesses. But in France, that was not a requirement. Actually, the French preferred a will completely handwritten by the person who died, and they did not require at that time notaries or witnesses. And Lowe would eventually agree to the fact that he would not challenge the will. It really didn't make that much difference. And I'll go through the will with you at another time. This time was just a little piece about some just odds and ends, the idea of the artwork, that we have two people doing an artistic rendering of Napoleon and then, of course, the two death masks. Now, the sources for this, which, of course, are the same ones that I have been using, Napoleon St. Helena by Martineau, Cashiers de St. Helena by General Bertrand, Napoleon in Exile by O'Meara, Le Dernier Moment de Napoleon by Antomarchi, Memoirs by Louis Marchand, With Napoleon on St. Helena by Dr. Stokey, St. Helena's Story by Dame Mabel Brooks.